SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, albeit damp and cool. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevebick.com. I got the eye on the forecast and the conditions with racing resuming downstate, and you know, we got horses in the first and second, assuming we stay on turf. And for now, they are staying on turf, and we'll monitor. Racing office sent out the notation that they'll update on the status. Not nearly as much rain here as was forecast. I mean, they were talking inch and a half, and it hasn't been that bad at all. And there also seems to be kind of an opening here leading into, you know, early mid-afternoon. So we'll see. We'll see. Most notably on this front, by the way, I'm glad I didn't get a chance yesterday to move or to tweet about Gus putting, you know, I told you that Gus put up the Keeneland action yesterday. And I can see that a number of people signed on and caught the pick five and the pick four, which was really nice. I mean, Gus, for about $100, Gus put together, you know, $1,500 worth of profit. So, or at least of return. And it, you know, it's a valuable, I say this all the time. The reaction to lousy weather invariably, you know, gets people to, yeah, I'm not going to play. Oh, look at the scratches. And it, well, if you took that attitude yesterday, you missed, you know, a really nice opportunity. And Gus, particularly, I thought, you know, put a pair of nice tickets together, including the two Rusty Arnold back-to-back winners. How about, you know, I had to tweet about that because Rusty at Keeneland is, you know, that's a perennial. You can go to the bank when it comes to Rusty. And he ends up sending out on one of the off-the-turf races. He had a horse stand tall in that fifth race allowance with Brian Hernandez Jr. And, you know, pays $13. And it was a tough horse, frankly, to latch onto off the turf. There wasn't previous off turf form really there. I think there was one race on the page that she had participated in, Stand Tall. This is an Ashbrook and Watts Humphrey product. Not one that they bred. And then there was one that Humphrey did breed with Will Farish, and that was the winner of the maiden claimer sixth, 10-1. So the Rusty Arnold double in the middle of that sequence yesterday, the pick six, pick, and then the pick five, pick four, really made the difference because everything else was completely mundane. Nakatomi, I glad I pointed out Nakatomi, did not go favored for Wesley Ward. This was the Arnold Zetcher firing line gelding. Yeah, you know, the two-year-olds, they're all, you know, they were all debuting. And happy for Mark DeTample, who, you know, right now is, I'm sure, you know, still smarting and still frustrated over the situation with Hidden Scroll. And first-time starter in this spot was absolutely ready, and Wesley is making the most of the Keeneland spring. So from there, you had the off the turf 3-horse field and His Glory, the Joe Sharp MTO. Not hard to find an MTO, although that horse didn't go favored. Joy Epifora was a 4-5 favorite, and then you had the favorite win the nightcap. So for this thing to pay what it did, all you had to do was include Rusty, 1,090 for the pick five, and the pick four paid 363, actually 364, 363.95. So great job by Gus. And in fact, Gus is going at it again today. He's put together another slate of action for Keeneland today. What did the pick six, out of curiosity, 9,800. 9,800. And frankly, you know what? It's too bad. I think in that case, I think Gus's second, he tried to single somebody in the pick six, and his second choice was the winner. And so, for just a little extra investment, boy, I didn't realize it. That's the first time I didn't look at the pick six yesterday at the number 9,818. So good job, Bogey, of course, on Twitter. And now that frankly, he's been doing the Gulfstream. He did the Gulfstream winter season for Twin Spires. So now that that's over, he's firing back away. So good to get Gus into the swing of things in time for Derby. And on the Indiana front, before we start talking about some news, and Dick Powell's going to be by, we'll get Tony Black, Pat McKenna. And speaking of news, Pat McKenna will join us at 10:30. And Pat, who I was ready to talk to late last week about the mobile betting situation in New York, he was going to come on and give us clarifications. Well, if you wait, 6 hours on a daily basis, I mean, there's another news story in New York to to add to the docket that we're going to discuss with Pat. And I've got, four or five things. The news yesterday, let me pause before we talk about Indiana, and I give you some interesting stuff from day two of Indiana Grand. The news yesterday that kind of was a little bit of a, of a late surprise. And Governor Cuomo was had been at Belmont and provided, a bunch of things about the hockey arena and what's going on there. And then I think somebody realized afterward they forgot to talk about attendance at the racetracks. And they had been intending to do this. And you've seen from press notes out of New York that, they've been waiting for the clarification and they knew it was coming. They didn't necessarily know it was coming yesterday. So we're going to hear from Pat on that topic. And, there's certain things that he can, I'm sure, clarify today and more or less establish what's going to happen from here. 20% capacity to start out. I saw where people were multiplying what 20% means at Saratoga. What's happening on April 23rd is not germane to what's going to happen necessarily on July 15th. I mean, you got 90 days. There's going to be X blank million more people vaccinated by July 15th. So who knows? I mean, the capacity at that point could be 40% or 50%. And in addition, Pat and I were talking yesterday, and you know, the Excelsior Pass concept that New York State has executed, I downloaded it this morning because, of course, I finished my vaccination. It'll be 3 weeks on Sunday, March 28th. Yeah, 3 weeks on Sunday. This concept, really, really cool. And I took me 3 minutes to download it, and it knew when I put my name and information in, you know, it knew which of the dates, you know, I had registered for the vaccination, and it immediately provided me with this Excelsior Pass that can be used as a reference. And given what the Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Bills announced yesterday, and Pat will address this, they're going to let, they'll accept 100% capacity at the odd, and it's not the odd anymore. It'll always be the odd for me. And Rich Stadium, it's not that either. But is it still the Marine Midland Center? It's the odd, period. It's the Buffalo Civic Auditorium. And I'm a Sabre fan, so I can say it. I don't know why anyone, especially now with Jack Eichel out for the rest of the year, I don't know why anyone. They had been playing better the last 10 days, you know, since they fired Methuselah. But this Excelsior Pass, if people, you know, want to go to the Sabres and Bills game, they'll let as many people in as have been vaccinated and can show it. So with that as a model, there's no telling what the potential is at Saratoga. There's no way to know. So Pat'll speculate. They're working behind the scenes, and you know, quite frankly, because of last summer, they had been working on and they had all kinds of models and, you know, potential scenarios for admission and for ticket lottery and for signups and, you know, all the things that all the venues that are accepting patrons right now have been going through. So we'll hear from Pat and he'll lay it out and, you know, as best he can and maybe a timetable. You know, they obviously aren't going to be ready to accept patrons at Belmont next Friday. I mean, it's not, you know, they're not slapping down a system overnight. So certainly for Belmont Stakes Day, there'll be a system in place. So Pat will lay out everything. He'll also explain that mobile betting. We'll also talk with Pat about the aftermath of Tuesday's fire and the stories that have come out and the heroes that have emerged, particularly Louis Miranda. And Miranda is right next door in Barn 61. And he, you know, Bob Ehalt wrote a piece at Bloodhorse. You know, he was sitting outside the barn and heard the commotion and looked up and you know, saw the smoke billowing, and the black smoke apparently choked out the entire barn. It was impossible. If you saw some of Wayne Potts's quotes, nobody could see anything. And so that adds to the panic and the confusion. But Louis Miranda in and out of the barn half a dozen times, pulling horses out, and Potts, of course, and his assistant. And it just amazing. Robert Falcone as well, and more. I don't know if you saw. If you've seen, I'm sure a lot of people, I'm sure it got plenty of circulation. Wayne Potts wrote a heartfelt appreciation to everybody for their sympathies and, you know, for their kind thoughts. And, yeah, some of the other things that, some of the other elements of this that have also, you know, the details, The sprinkler system worked well. And, you know, some people said, how can there not be sprinklers? Of course there's sprinklers. and there's been modernization even in an older barn, you know, in some of the, you know, the older barns in 60 is, you know, one of the, you know, like, let's say, you know, late mid-century barns, you know, 60s, 70s era. But they've, you know, they've put in, you know, better sprinkler systems. You know, famously and tragically, the fire in 86, the sprinkler system was scheduled for work the next, literally the next day. And, you know, there's no telling, you know, how, because that started in the hayloft. So there's no telling if that, you know, if it could have, you know, prevented what transpired in 86. You know, but, you know, fire sprinkling technology, you know, is constantly on the improve. And in this case, it was instrumental. I mean, the barn, I told you yesterday, the barn is intact because of it. It's not like the barn was raised. Yeah, part of the, you know, particular, you know, not that it mattered, you know, what level of horse perished. I mean, it doesn't matter. But in this particular case, the American Sailor, who is the horse you'll recall from last summer at Saratoga, when Imprimis got disqualified, to the chagrin of Joe Orsino, it was American Sailor who was second and was elevated to the win. And, you know, on Tuesday night, when I tweeted what I tweeted, and extending the thoughts to Potts and his team, kind of had a feeling. Gary and Paul Barone, Paul was on site, and he put six or seven horses into their barn, and Paul had told Gary, and Gary told me, he said, you know, Potts lost his best horse, and that, you know, kind of speculated that, you know, the stake winner. He was trying to come back. He was getting ready for, he's an older horse, he's seven or eight, and was getting ready for the season. There was also an unraced horse that was bought at the Horses of Racing Age sale in Ocala, BCD. So, but absolute heroes all around, and everybody that's pitched in to take care of the horses at the various barns where they've, you know, Jeff Engelhart's and all of Wayne's. So could have been way, way worse. That's the bottom line. And there were three team members that went to the hospital with smoke inhalation, and nobody seriously injured. So a monumental tragedy avoided. So we'll cover all of this with Pat. I've got, there's other stuff too for him that we've got to cover. So Saratoga training opening, and plenty of other stuff with Pat. We're going to talk to Charlie Lopresti as well, and Marty McGee yesterday. You know, he had run into Charlie at Keeneland, and you know, it's not unusual that, you know, Lopresti during an off season, during a winter, would have he'd have a handful of horses that he would start at Turfway, and at some point, I don't think anybody, you know, I don't think it was particularly, you know, shocking that you didn't see Charlie over the winter in the entries. Well, the reality is that Charlie Lopresti stopped training, and kind of return to what he and wife Amy do, you know, as at least the way I certainly came to know them, which is starting young horses. And they're back to that. And you know, Charlie, who, you know, had about, I don't know, make it a 18-year career, 60, something like that. I mean, he never had a big operation. I mean, he always was a fairly small outfit. And so, you know, if you didn't see, that's why it comes as, I think, a surprise to a lot of people, because, you know, just because you hadn't seen him start too many over the winter or any, you didn't really think anything of it. Because then in the spring, you know, typically at Keeneland, he would then kind of get going. But certainly the period when we got to know him, I first was introduced to Charlie and Amy Lopresti through the Kleins, through Richard Klein. And I'd written a story for Blood Horse after a Klein, a splashy winner. And I started to get some background, and he said, you know, Charlie and Amy Lopresti, and I can't remember if I'd heard the name before or not, but I ended up reaching out to them and getting their story. So then when Charlie kind of seemingly burst on the scene, with Here Comes Ben and Wise Dan and Tour Allure and, you know, that wonderful run. I knew him a little bit, so it was really a lot of fun to be, not in front on it, but, you know, just to know Charlie going into that period, and, you know, the Horse of the Year titles and the Grade Ones, the Breeders' Cup, and nearly two Breeders' Cup, Tour Allure. We're not going to talk about that. We talk about that too often. Here Comes Ben at Saratoga was a great one. And, you know, the whole story, actually, when you think about it, with Wise Dan and Mr. Fink, you know, who, when these horses, when those Lisa Danielle progeny started to win, you know, and Charlie was having all that success, Mr. Fink, you know, was very ill. And, you know, I think we all, the way it was introduced, the story, nobody really expected, Mr. Fink to, you know, to last as long as he did. And part of the reason was because he was so enjoying and so looking forward to all of the starts, particularly as Wise Dan, you know, started to maraud 23 wins. 23 wins, $7.5 million in earnings, 31 starts, 23 wins. Unbelievable, including a 5-race win streak to end his career. And with an issue or two, which we'll talk about with Charlie. In fact, Casey, he's on the road. He's driving to Eastern Kentucky, and try Charlie now. He's not sure about how the reception will be. So if it's bad now, we'll visit with Dick Powell, and if the reception's good, we'll talk to Charlie directly. One of our real favorites. He ended the career with that Shadwell win, and it was anticipating another Breeders' Cup try, and got hurt at that point, and couldn't make the Breeders' Cup. And what was it? He had a colic. He had a colic incident. Was that the last year, or was that the year before? Charlie will remember. he put together the horse just, you know, it would be it got to be that it was a surprise when he got beat. I mean, that's how. And I hate to say this, but it. Am I wrong to suggest that it feels like it's a long time ago already? I don't know why. It's 2011 through 2014. It's 10 years, 10, yeah, 8, 9, 10 years ago. That's long enough, right? I guess it is. I'm sure Charlie feels that way. and he joins us now. Charlie Lopresti, good morning. There we
go. Hello?
Charlie.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going fine here. It's always good to talk to you, but under this circumstance, I hate that the news that Marty brought out is a reality.
Well, I try to stay under the radar, really, and I hadn't been. Probably hadn't run a horse since last fall, and my nephew Reeve McGahee, who worked for me and his dad, he started his own stable, and he was able to. I was able to get him, the stalls that I had there at Keeneland, and some of my clients and a lot of his clients that he's picked up, and. I just thought it's time to, at my age, there's a lot of things that I want to do. Like I told Marty, our farm and our bird dogs and our quarter horses and our cattle and like to hunt and fish some. And, the racetrack takes up a lot of your time. And I thought it was time to just slow down.
Nobody's going to begrudge that by any means. And, when you had the success that that you've had and, you ran up the horses of the year and the kinds of wins and it feels like you've accomplished, about as much as you'd want to accomplish.
Well, yeah, Steve, the game has been so good to Amy and I. Small trainer like I was, or I am still, I guess, to have limited amount of horses and have the success that I've had just didn't happen to a lot of people. And we've been very fortunate, and we met so many good people because of those horses, just like you and the Velasquez's and all the people when we traveled to New York and California, Woodbine. We just met a lot of nice people, and it was so good for Mr. Fink and even Mrs. Chase and the Lewis family, all the people that we've been associated with. We're just really proud to have done that, and everybody understands. I the game's changing, and I don't have the big numbers, but I never wanted to be that way anyway. And I don't begrudge those guys. That's the way they do things, and hats off to them. But I never wanted to be that way, and I never wanted to travel all over the country with different divisions. And but it was good the way I did it, and I was proud about the way I did it. And who would have ever thought that I would develop some of the horses that I did?
And the horse flesh, obviously, the horses take people, wherever they go. And, the whole story of Lisa Danielle and Mr. Fink and how productive, successful Dan and Wise Dan and, then here comes Ben and Touralure. It was just a crazy intense period where these horses kind of came through.
Well, yeah, just go back to Touralure. I mean, I trained his mother. She was she was a 30 claimer. And look at what she produced, and that's a horse that we raised at our farm in Brohl, Touralure. Here comes Ben the same way, Wise Dan, successful Dan. It was just, I mean, you just that stuff doesn't happen to a lot of people. You know, and as I told the blood horse yesterday, those were just good horses. I mean, yes, we took care of them, and it was, you know, we got to break them and do everything with them, but they were good horses, and those kind of horses don't grow on trees. But I don't know how in the heck they popped up in my hands, but they did, and it worked out really well.
It was amazing too, because it and obviously the Dans are one thing, and the progeny that came out of Lisa Danielle, but the fact Tora Lure for the 4D, you know, the 4D group, and you mentioned Mrs. Chase, so it was really three different sets of connections that, yeah, you know, that had these horses come your way.
Well, yeah, and then you got to look at the horses that we broke for people. I mean,
sure,
for God's sake, we had Charismatic at our farm. He didn't leave there till February of his 2-year-old year. Exploit, all the Klein horses, the stakes winners that the Kleins had. I mean, not only the horses that I trained and developed, but about the horses that went through our little, you know, our little program. I mean, those guys. I mean, Kentucky Derby, for God's sake, Breeders' Cup winners, with the clients. But we've had really good people, and the one thing that it's getting harder to me, it's getting harder and harder to find those true racing people, that are in the game just to race horses. You know, now you've got so many of these commercial outfits that they breed to sell, and it's, you know, the true racing people that actually breed to race, they're harder and harder to find.
No doubt. And you, there was no point where anybody would confuse your approach, you know, to being advertising and out hustling for owners.
No, I wasn't very good at that. Mr. Lewis used to tell me all the time, he said, for God's sake, Charlie, you need to put a sign out in front of that barn. You were Charismatic, was raised and broken, a Kentucky Derby winner. I said, oh, Mr. Lewis, I think people know that. You know, I just never was, I don't know, maybe it's a fault, I don't know.
No,
But I never, you know, I just liked the horses, and I liked what I was doing, and I liked the people that I had them for, and I always thought you just treat every horse the same, don't worry about the pedigree or how much it costs, and just, you know, they're either going to be good or they're not, and man, I've had a lot of them that were good.
And that's an interesting, that's actually an important sidebar to, you know, some of these horses. I mean, certainly Here Comes Ben, who was by Street Cry, there was pedigree there, that the Chases, you know, bred, yeah, and that nice Dejure mare. But,
yeah, you look at Daredevil, that's all that family. And it's still today. Look what Daredevil's done, as a sire. And we had him. I mean, when Mrs. Chase decided to sell him in her later years, but that mare, Chase raced the Wild Wind.
Yeah.
I mean,
Raging Wind.
Yeah. Right. They were all, that was a good family, very good family. And, Here Comes Ben. He was crooked. He was offset. We weren't going to sell him. And I remember going to Saratoga with him. He was a top allowance horse and won a listed stake. And when I got there and saw the arsenal that Todd Fletcher and some of the, you know, asked me, says, what the heck am I doing here? And, you know, big drama. And man, when I walked over there, I was thinking, God, I got to be out of my mind trying to run into grade one. And we went into grade one Forgo, and it just went north from there.
That it's exactly. And, you know, the one of the funny parts of that, that I, you know, that I'll absolutely remember, is somebody from the press office said, you know, Steve, do you know Charlie Lopresti? I said, that's him right there. Because, you know, you were a new face at that time.
I was a little tiny fish in a big pond, man. And when I got there and I realized what I was up against, I was like, man, do I belong here? And I mean, I never forget Tom Durkin And here comes Ben. And here comes Ben indeed. I'm like, holy crap, he's going to win this race.
It was. I've got a picture that I love with Alex Solis. I don't know. Somebody took and sent me where we're talking, and he's wearing that black and pink jacket of the Chases. Yeah. And that started. If I'm not mistaken, did you win a Grade One at Saratoga 3 years in a row? 4 years in a row?
I have to do the math, but I probably did. Yeah, maybe three. Yeah. Anyway, I have to do. I think that's probably right.
It was special, and when you start to get on a roll like that, especially with the the Lisa Danielle babies, that's one of the amazing things about what Mr. Fink accomplished too with that group, because Successful Dan was Successful Appeal. Wise Dan, Wise Ferry, Casino Dan was okay. That's right. That's right.
He thought I was crazy when I told him Wise Dan was as good as Successful Dan. He said, "Charlie, you can't be by Wiseman's Ferry. For God's sake, that horse hadn't had anything." and when he got beat the first time, and he said, "Well, maybe just run him for 30. I go, "Oh, Mr. Fink, let's just try one more time, But he didn't have the best. He didn't have the best 4-year-old year starting out. We got beat. And but boy, we got him on the grass. He just took off from there.
I want you to. There's a couple of things about Wise Dan we should touch on. And actually, that period of success, Charlie, there may be a something unique and interesting to ask you about, and that's sure. the synthetic surface, because you were training on it, certainly, and then those big horses all early in their career had synthetic starts, and in terms of soundness and so forth, it's pretty well documented. But how did the synthetic figure into your mind to some success and your training method?
Well, a lot of people boo-hoo the synthetic surface, but and I know the gamblers had a hard time with it, handicappers. But I will tell you, Steve, for me, where I stayed in Kentucky year-round, winter-long, having that main track at Keeneland to be able to train properly all winter-long and prepare those horses for spring racing, that was a big, big, big plus, because nowadays a guy that, if I'd have stayed at Keeneland year-round, it'd been very hard, because now they're back to dirt. It had been very hard to be competitive in graded stakes in the spring of the year. Wesley Ward asked me that the other day. We were somewhere, and Wesley said, "How in the world did you ever get that horse ready to win the Grade One, in the spring?" I said, "Wesley, you forget that's back when Keeneland was synthetic." I said, "The main track was synthetic, and it was open year-round, and we could really, we could train those horses." I said, "Now, it's gone back to dirt, and you can't train there in the wintertime. You only got the little track." And nothing against Keeneland, but just they had to do what they had to do. But that was a big part of my success was synthetic track, in the wintertime. You could train, and you could prepare those horses.
Yeah.
Now, when you get cold weather, the tracks freeze and it's hard to prepare. I mean, you can get a horse ready to run, but when you're talking about Grade One stakes horses to run in the spring of the year, you either better go south or you better have a facility to train on. And we were able to do that. And I think the synthetic track, it has its place. It kept the horses sound. For a long time, you could train them without shoes. You could freshen them, and we had we could turn horses out, kind of like what they do at Fair Hill and some of the training centers.
And I'm looking now. I've got Wise Dan's complete set of PPs here. And remind me when was the surgery? When did he get sidelined?
The last year that he was running. He got the colic rule back in the summer, early summer, before we were going to go to Saratoga, or late spring, I guess it was, right after Churchill, I believe.
And here it is. Absolutely. Okay. When's the Maker's Mark? When's the Woodford. Early times, the Woodford, whatever the hell it was at the time.
Yeah, and that's when he went then, and right then is when he got the colic.
Yeah. But then you managed to bring him back and win the Bernard Baruch and the Shadwell to end his career. And I forget, what happened after the Shadwell that you couldn't go to Breeders' Cup?
Well, and that's when we found the injury. And,
okay, I couldn't remember.
Yep. And that's when we couldn't. That's when we had to stop.
Well, he was only 23 for 31 at that point.
Yeah, he was. I tell you what, I don't know. Johnny Velasquez was here the other day.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you see the video of those?
Yeah, it was great.
I tell you what, Steve, and it's just unbelievable to watch those horses. And watch the way they can still run in the field like that and play. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but they haven't really lost a step. But at that kind of age, you never think about, you know, they're just different, those horses. I just, it's hard to describe. They're just different. Reeve was out there the other day, and he and I were talking about Wise Dan, how smart he is. Horses like that are, I don't know, he was just a different beast. I mean, we go to Woodbine, we go to Saratoga. He could sit there at Saratoga and look out the window and watch those races run. Most horses, you'd have to close the window because they couldn't bear to stand to watch a horse, you know, the races run. They get nervous and excited. He took everything in stride. Nothing took him to California, get off the plane, got him to the barn there, and he stayed at the mountains. And he just was a different beast, that horse. It's hard to describe.
Well, it was so much fun. And I referenced before Casey reached out. I talked about how it helped keep Mr. Fink alive. I mean, when the story started in 2011. You know, I don't think any of us expected Mort to, you know, live in another 5 years. I mean, the expectation was that, well, but then, you know, then he basically had something to look forward to, and it carried him on.
Well, you know, he used to tell me that all the time, Steve, and I never realized that. But we had quite a few offers on that horse from time to time. And, you know, like he told me, he said, Charlie, I don't need the money. And it's the only thing that keeps me going every day, to get up and read about him or call you and talk to you about him after he worked, and where we're going to go to run. And, you know, we were going to have dinner after the race. And, you know, I mean, that you know, when a man reaches that age and he goes to dialysis 3 days a week and that's the only thing he has in his life, when it was all over and done, I understand what he was talking about, you know, and that horse kept him alive. I mean, people don't realize he had to fight sometimes just to get on the plane and come to watch him run. I mean, it was a major fight for him.
Well, and I remember there were times where, and if I brought it up with you afterward and you would tell us that, you know, you didn't expect him to, you know, to make the trip to what, you know, whichever race it might have been. And of course, you know, he actually, we got to acknowledge that there were two things in his life: keeping track and looking forward to Wise Dan and whatever the dam was going to produce, and then holding court at trackside in Arlington Heights where
exactly.
Yeah. Right, he famously was
every Saturday he'd be over there with his friends at the OTB there. Yep. He never in his wildest dreams would have ever believed the ride we went on. And I can tell you, I'm the same way. If somebody would have told me 3 years before that started to happen that I was going to go on that kind of a ride with four different horses, I'd have said they were crazy.
Yeah, and you know, to show how generous a horse, you know, it's funny how associated John Velasquez became with him. But we got to acknowledge Jose Lascano never lost with him. Not that he lost that much, but Jose Lascano had to step in a couple of different times, four times, and was terrific with him.
Hey, I tell you what, I wouldn't want to have been in his shoes. I could tell you that right now. Jason Bidas was there the other day after he came with Reeve to the barn, and we talked about that. You know, every time he had to step in, he stepped in. And I got to give credit. I tell you, Julian Leperu rode him a bunch and did really well with him. But Julian was committed to go to California to ride Never Retreat, and he couldn't ride him in the Clark. And so I called Angel Cordero, and, you know, Angel looked at the films, and then they took him and Johnny talked, and he came to ride him, and he won the Clark on the dirt. And Johnny said to Angel, and Angel said to me, "Don't ever take us off that horse." So how could you take John Velasquez off when Julian took off to go ride another horse? But he was committed. He was committed to go to California, and that's how Johnny got him.
Well, and you mentioned that is an aspect that I haven't even brought up yet, which is, you know, the way you moved him on the dirt, and he wins the Clark. He got beat an absolute, you know what, a lip in the Foster.
Yeah. And I tell you what, in the last year of his training, I don't think that horse was ever as good as he was. And I tell you, if there was ever a time that I wanted to run him on the dirt, it was that time on his home track at Keeneland in the Classic. And I talked to Mr. Fink about it, and maybe we jinxed ourselves, but I tell you, he might have gave American Pharoah a run for his money.
Wow. Well, it would have been nice if somebody had at least confronted him instead of letting him cruise around. I do want to mention, too, John McKee broke his maiden at Turfway.
Yep. That's right.
And in addition to Julian and Johnny and Jose Lascano, John Court won the Firecracker and the Presque Isle Mile.
That's where it all started. John Court worked him over there at Churchill one day on the grass, and because we couldn't get him in the, I think we couldn't get the three other than to go on the dirt. And Mr. Fink said, "Well, what are we? Oh no, we were going to try him on the grass. That's what it was." And we couldn't get the race to go on the grass. And Mr. Fink said, "What are we going to do now?" So the only thing I know to do, nominate him to the Firecracker. We'll breeze him and see how he works on the grass, because I've never tried him on the grass. John Colt worked him on the grass. He worked lights out. We put him in the Firecracker. He was a long shot, and boom, he won it.
14-1, and he beat Baryshnikov and Strike Impact. Then he beat Jimmy Sims in the Presque Isle Mile. Julian won the Fayette on him. We should mention too, Rafi Bejarano won the Phoenix. His first stake win.
He didn't get beat very far in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. He never was a sprinter. I mean, we took him to the Breeders' Cup Sprint that year.
Yeah,
because it was a win and you're in. The Phoenix was a win and you're in.
And not only that, Charlie, it was only his fifth career start.
Yep. No, you know, it's like I told Reed yesterday, we were at the barn and we were walking up to the track. I said, "You know, I told Johnny yesterday when all that stuff was going on, it was like a big blur, really. And, you know, you were just in the middle of it and you never really thought about how good he was or what he was accomplishing, because it was just race after race." And then when it was over, and then you start having mediocre horses and you realize what you had. and Graham Motion said that to me one day. Graham said, I forget where we were, and he said, "Boy," he said, "I'll tell you, you're going to feel a big void when that horse is gone." And because Graham knows about that, you know, when he said,
sure.
And he was so right. You know, when it was happening, I wouldn't say you take it for granted, but it was just a big blur. It was just happening, and you never thought about when it was going to be over or what it was going to be like when it was over. Boy, when it was over, it was over.
Yeah, at the same time, I mean, you. I think back, I'm sure if I asked Casey to go dig around to find the conversation, you know, I remember you being very unsure if he would ever race again after the colic surgery. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he came back and came back the way he did. And we, you know, we had, you know, you were on a regular basis.
Well, I can tell you, he's a tough son of a gun. He come off that van after the colic surgery. He bounced off that trailer with his tail up over his back. And I was like, man, this horse, he's just as tough as nails. But, you know, looking back, it wasn't that big of a deal. Well, it was a big deal anytime you open a horse up. But when they got him on the table, and I guess when they when they upside downed him to do surgery, he fixed himself.
Right.
So when they opened him up, the surgeon turned around and looked at me with his thumb up, and I was like, what the heck's he talking about? He got his belly opened up here. And he came out. He said, Charlie, he's already fixed that thing on his own. You know, it flipped back to the way it should be. So basically they opened up and they closed him right up. It wasn't like they had to resect any bowel or they had to take a twist out or there was any blood supply lost. Everything looked good. It was like they opened the hood on a car and did a checkup on him, you know. But still he had a big incision under there, and that had to heal, and, you know, the trauma of it and everything. But he just... Steve, I'm telling you, that horse, he breathed different air. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
Going back to Charlie, you know, when you look collectively, and obviously you and Amy will continue to, you know, develop young horses. And you mentioned the Lewises. The Lewises gave you your first winner, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first winner I had was Competitive Edge for Bob Lewis. That guy was golden, and every year... You know, he'd go to the sale and he'd buy Wayne Lucas horses and Bob Baffert horses. And then he'd say, well, now, Charlie, you know, you want to go pick four or five out, or, you know, give you a budget and say, buy one, buy four, buy five, and don't you worry about it. If they don't pan out, we'll get more. He was just that way. I mean, he was easy to train for. He was a gentleman. He loved the game. He treated everybody with the $2 better to the top people in the industry. He treated everybody the same. He was just a generous man, and he loved the game. You know, when I go back to Mrs. Chase, I mean, I had Ergen for her. He was a winner book favorite for the Kentucky Derby. We broke him, went out to California. I could go on and on about those people that I had horses for, Steve, not only that I trained for, but that we laid up their horses and broke their horses, you know, Mr. Klein. You know the story. I mean, they were true racing people. They're racing fans. That's what they were in the business for. That's what they loved. Heck, we had Albertus Maximus. I had him for Mr.
That's right.
Case.
That's right.
I got an Albertus Maximus filly in training right now. That's out of that same family from Frank and Jimmy, the first runner that Reeve won with down there at Oaklawn last winter.
Could you foresee, you know, sending out some starters off the farm?
No, I don't think I do. I have ran some horses off that farm and done pretty well. But no, anything that I have, I think I'm trying to recommend Reeve, and he's just because I feel tied to it, and they can come back to the farm if they need a rest and that kind of thing. And he's gonna do well. And not only the horses that I've put his way, but he's picking up some. I mean, he's had horses for Joe Allen and Claiborne and Helen Alexander and. He's going to do well. He's a good young horseman. He works hard. He spent a lot of time around me and his dad. He put his time in. He's between the two of us, I think he worked for us damn near 9 years.
The pedigree, the dam and the sire, he's got horseman blood in both sides of the pedigree.
Yep. Yep, he does, and we're proud of him, and we're really hoping it'll be a lot of fun for me, and I know for his dad and his mom and Amy, his aunt, to see him do well. But it's a tough business, and he needs to see that part of it too. And there's some ups and downs. I mean, his dad's seen him, I've seen him, and he's been through that with both of us. He's seen it too.
Well, it really was a pretty spectacular ride, and about a 6-7 year period that there was multiple stake winners, graded stake winners, and I don't know if anybody, Charlie's won as many grade ones in an 8-7-8 year period as you did.
Well, Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think about it, really.
But I said
when it was, you don't think about it when it was happening, when it's all done and over with, that's when it's like, holy cow, we did that.
Yeah, you sure did. Which race, which is your favorite?
That race, the second race at Woodbine when he broke the track record, that was just unbelievable. Johnny and I were talking about that day. Johnny said, Charlie, if I ever really let him run, he might have broke the world record that day. He said, hey, and there was no outrider down the backside. He said, hell, I could barely get him pulled up. He wanted to go around there again.
If I'm not mistaken, it's funny that that's the race you bring up. If I'm not mistaken, I was with Mrs. Weber, and she had Za Approval in there, Wise Dan, I think, beat him every time they met, and they met a handful of times. I'm pretty sure I watched that one with Charlotte. There weren't too many disappointments. I suppose, I guess you and I can commiserate on the Churchill Mile with Tour Allure, because that's about one of the worst beats in my horse playing career.
I thought I won the race. I'm going through the tunnel, and Nick Nicholson was the president of Keeneland that time, and he and his wife are hugging me. Amy and I are hugging, and then I come through the tunnel, and I watch the slow-mo, and I'm like, oh, no. I mean, because I saw Julian fist-pumping when he went past the wire. And I was like, oh, I don't know. And that was a killer. That was a killer. But you know what? To think that we went and won the Woodbine Million 3 years in a row, not only with Wise Dan, but with Tour Allure.
That's right.
That's pretty
that's
amazing.
Right.
The Bernard Baruch with Wise Dan and Tour Allure. I mean, that's the kind of ride we were on.
Exactly. And I just sent Casey that Woodbine Mile. We'll listen to it because it was special. And one thing about him too, as I look at this, he didn't care if it was firm or if it was yielding, which is unusual in a but I suppose it's pretty much about him that, you know, dirt, synthetic, yielding turf, firm turf.
You know, Wayne Lucas used to tell me all the time, I never forget his favorite saying, good horses run over broken glass.
Exactly. Case, let me know when we can play this, and as soon as he gets it, they load in pretty quickly, so you don't have to play around with the edit, even though it's like a 5-minute video. And I wanted to make sure we listened to something, and
ready
this one.
Ready on this end, Steve.
Very good. Here it is. Charlie Lopresti has been with us. And let's, before we send Charlie off to Eastern Kentucky for the day, let's listen to the 2013 Woodbine Mile record-breaking performance from Wise Dan.
The post. They're off in the Rico Woodbine Miles. Approval, Xcaper, and Dimension. They both come on, and it's Xcaper who's closest to the hedge to take the early lead, and Dimension runs right with Xcaper. Velasquez takes a hold of the champion Wise Dan, who's back in third position. Za Approval to his outside in fourth. Then we have 7-8 lengths to Riding the River, and the Euro Invader Trade Storm trails this field as they run along the backstretch.
Okay. Oh,
by a neck to Dimension. Wise Dan's just tugging at John Velasquez as they make their way toward the far turn. Za Approval is in fourth position and four lengths off the lead. Then Trade Storm and Riding the River. It's Xcaper hounded by Dimension through a half mile in 45 and two-fifths. And watching them go at it is Wise Dan, who's just a length and three-quarters off the lead. Za Approval's in fourth position. Then Trade Storm, Riding the River, and as they arrive at the top of the stretch in the Rico Woodbine Mile. And Johnny Velasquez gives the green light to Wise Dan, and his response is instantaneous. And Wise Dan has taken the lead, and they come to the final furlong. Za Approval in a full-out drive in second. Johnny hasn't moved on Wise Dan. Wise Dan. Titan of the turf, the sensational Wise Dan. Za Approval was second. Trade Storm third, and Riding the River was fourth.
That was the easiest 600,000 he ever made.
Right at the tail end. Charlie, I don't know if you could hear it. Our listeners. Oh, good, good. All right. It was just for some reason in my headset, it didn't come back until the end. Now, that's one fun thing about this, Charlie. Whenever you need your spirits lifted, you can go to YouTube and watch any number of these races.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we do it from time to time. But, yeah, he was awesome that day. Johnny said he was full of run the whole way. I mean, he had so many good races, but so many races that were, you know, bad turf, locked in on the inside, but that day he was just flawless that day.
For so many, I know that in fact Marty McGee, Wise Dan's his favorite horse, and certainly Marty's in his long career, you know, he's seen as many good horses as anybody, and that's a tremendous compliment. One thing, Charlie, I heard you're not going to be doing in retirement. Doc Alday says you're retired from the team roping.
Well, I haven't retired. I just took a little bit of a break from it because I just haven't had a lot of time. And I've been that's where I'm going right now to look at a bird dog puppy. I've been into these bird dogs, and so I've been kind of doing that stuff too. But no, I've got a couple of young roping horses that I'm going to start back, and maybe that's going to give me some more time to do that too.
I love it. Well, are we going to see you the next couple of weeks, Churchill, or I'm coming in on Friday? You're going to be at the tracks at all the next 2 weeks?
I don't think so, but just give me a holler. You want to come by and see Wise Dan? Just give me a holler.
It's a deal. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I've never had that chance. I'm going to take you up on it.
You should come out. You should come out and spend a half hour or so with me.
You got it. You got it. Charlie, this was tremendous. Thank you. Charlie Lopresti, everybody, who was always just so generous. And, you know, we had so many wonderful conversations. And, starting I'll find that article, Blood Horse, I wrote that introduced me to Charlie Lopresti and Amy. They were well known and respected by the trade and by owners and other horsemen before, you know, the betting public got to know them. And I wouldn't be doting on you if I'd known that.
But anyway, well, I'm gonna get off the phone, but
go ahead, get to
all your kind words.
I love Charlie, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Charlie Lopresti. Going out to look at a bird dog. Let's take a top of the hour break. Now I'm behind. I want to get Dick Powell in. We'll get to Tony. We'll get to Tony after Pat McKenna as well. Pat is going to join us at the bottom of this hour. So let's get Dick in. We'll do the international report and Hong Kong Jockey Club. Plus, I haven't talked about how about the white ghost, the Japanese white thoroughbred. Another grade one, right? Over the weekend? Pretty cool story. I didn't expect to go that long with Charlie, but it was one of my absolute favorites, and we had so much fun with those horses. A lot of great memories. All right, back after this. Hour two at the races, Sirius XM. And right now, looks like the weather's holding off in New York. Feels like we're going to get those races run on the grass. So I got that to look forward to. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.